come on at 4 o'clock?
Sure.
Yeah. Can you come on at 3? Yeah. I mean, there you are. You're like the best girl in the gym, and it's like, you want to dance with somebody? Just go ask Hannah, and then you make the long, uncomfortable move from the boy side of the gymnasium all the way across.
Just can't
and
say
Hannah
no.
Could see him, Hannah could see him coming all sweaty and nervous. She's like, yes, and she stops him 10 feet. Yes, I will dance with you. So thanks for dancing with the Tom and Curly Show on a
daily basis.
Hannah,
anytime.
All right, what do you got for us today? Anything good, or just go right
it's
into
the good news when the governor talks these days. Always good news.
No.
Yeah. So first, we had an update on the vaccination situation.
Yeah.
The pace of our vaccination program and availability are both on an upswing. We are averaging over a 7-day average now, 43,764 doses every day. More than 1.7 million doses have been administered in the state of Washington. And we've had 2 days during the last week where we actually exceeded 60,000 doses a day. To put that in context, when we started this, we were doing about 13,000 doses a day. So this has been a remarkable acceleration of our vaccination program.
And he says the state has come together and done great things to fight this pandemic.
And the thought that we will continue saving lives as we have, probably 11,000 lives we've saved because we've been effective and science-based, and we continually
don't know that
to save lives. So I'm very excited about this. So today, because of these efforts and because the supply is increasing, we got some really good news about vaccine eligibility. On our current trajectory, we expect that on March 22nd, a little less than 3 weeks from today, we will enter our second tier of phase 1B.
Now, here's what that means.
We are also expanding who will be eligible in this next round. That will include critical workers who work in certain congregate settings will be eligible come March 22nd if our plans come to pass. This, again, assumes that supplies will increase on the trajectory that we have plans to accept. So this group of people are folks who work in agriculture, food processing, grocery stores, public transit, firefighters, law enforcement, as well as workers in corrections, prisons, jails, or detention centers. Now, in that same tier, we will include people over the age of 16 who are pregnant or have a disability that puts them at high risk.
And beyond that, then, he said, if all goes well, with the supply keeps coming in as we expect, and, you know, there's no crazy activity with the virus, or even if there is, then on the April 12th, mid-April, they'll go to the next tier, which is where you have the comorbidities, people with other conditions. So they'll be eligible for the vaccine. Anybody who's 50 and older with two of those would be able to get the vaccine. 2 weeks later, on April 26th, everybody 16 and older with comorbidities would be able to do it, and on and on and on. So that's the plan, a little updated.
Uh-huh. Okay. Where do we stand compared to everybody else in the United States? I know West Virginia leads the nation, and South Dakota and North Dakota. How are we doing in comparison? Do you have any idea?
I don't have the current idea. I had known a week or so ago, and we were not bad.
I think we're somewhere in the middle, I think.
To that goal, almost to 45,000 a day, which was the goal.
Yeah. Now, these new categories, has there been any kind of a I don't know what you call it, like a industry lobbying to get in that group? Like the teachers were moved in with the 65 and up recently, and now you've got the frontline workers, like the grocery store clerks, a lot of people who were concerned about that. Has there been any jockeying for inclusion into that next group that were shut out? Is this everybody that most people agreed would be the next round? Is there any controversy around that decision?
No controversy that I know of, but I can tell you all of those groups, your agricultural workers, your food processing, your plants and things like that, the grocery store workers for sure, law enforcement, firefighters, and for sure the corrections facilities, the detention centers, because there's been so many outbreaks there. They've all been lobbying for weeks and weeks just to be, you know, moved up. And so now that the teachers are, those are your essential people. They need to get up in line.
On the face of it, it seems it makes sense. It seems reasonable.
Yeah, and I think so. And I think the timeline's a little bit moved up for everyone under this plan.
Has the governor addressed the number of people that don't want to get it for fear of it or whatever
good question,
the reason
yeah.
is? Because there is a lot of healthcare workers that don't want to, firefighters that don't want to, since the police. There's a number of people who said, I don't get it. I don't trust it. First of all, I know that Kamala Harris said that if Donald Trump told her to get the vaccine, she wouldn't get it. She said that in August. I don't know if she's changed since Joe Biden's president.
Well, yeah,
I
she's
think she
gotten
did. Oh, that's right. She said she did get it. That's right. But people say they don't want to get it. They don't trust it. They say it's not really a vaccine. This MR thing isn't really. It's some a new way of vaccinating that isn't even a vaccine, and that they'd be better off sort of testing their own personal ability to fight off viruses as opposed to using this. Have they? I know they're trying to spend. I think they're spending $50 million on a public service campaign
yeah.
to try to encourage people. This is not in the state of Washington, the United States, to encourage people to go ahead and get the vaccine.
Sure, and they have been from the beginning. And I asked, I think right when the vaccine first became available or was about to become available, I had done an interview with a frontline healthcare worker who's in the trauma staffer who was talking to me about all of the various difficulties that they experience right now in the pandemic. And she said another one adding to that is this thing that, you know, now they're making it sound like I have to get the vaccine and I don't have to get the vaccine and I don't want to get the vaccine. And that's expanded. There are a lot of people who say they don't want to. The number of people who do want it far outweigh that. And he's been asked a couple of times about that, as have the health secretary. And they say, you know, they're confident in its safety and its ability to work. And they have that extra level of protection because they go through the whole West Coast kind of review process. And their hope is to, you know, get the public campaign to encourage people to get it. That's about all you get. Never, you know, they need to get as many people vaccinated for all of us to benefit is the other thing that they hit on, which is a large percentage.
Yeah. And right now, that's not the number one concern, because right now we don't have enough vaccine for everybody.
Right.
Immediately. But yeah, there'll be a stronger campaign. My suspicion is once we get people that want to get vaccinated, that's when you'll see a real push about people like John who are on the fence about it.
Right.
No, I just look at it like I don't really feel I'm going to test my own immunity. I know chances of me dying of this thing microscopically slim, whether survival rate 99.9 for me, 99.98, 98.7 for people that are over 65. I look at the odds. You know what? I'm going to pass on it. So it has nothing against Donald Trump. Good for him for Warp Speed. Good for you, Tom, for getting if you want to get it. It should be entirely up to you. It shouldn't be something that's forced upon us. I hope we don't have the government forcing us. Well, not yet, right? I mean, because we've started to hear about these things called travel passports or COVID passports, and the idea that you might have to show something on your phone in order to go into a restaurant, in order to sit down and eat, that they might get to a point, or to go into a public place of some sort, you'll have to show that you got the vaccine.
I'm not doing that.
Whoa, Little Miss Wow. Look at this. Apparently, the first guy walking across the gymnasium offering to give you a vaccine, and you say no.
The vaccine, when it's ready to, you know, when it's easy and just like a regular doctor's appointment, then I'll go and do that. It's not my turn.
There you go.
Wiggling out of that one. All right, changing subjects for you. Let's talk about the fact that the virus era attacks on Asians rise.
Wait, I'm not done. There's more from Inslee. There's two separate subjects. We'll come back to that.
Tell the governor he doesn't have to say the state of Washington. We pretty much can fill that in, but he says that all the time. Washingtonians are
Washingtonians in the state of Washington.
We know where we are. Our governor. Whether we want you or not, we got it. Keep going. All right, what else you got?
Okay, so Inslee also updating the school situation.
Inslee from the state of Washington.
The elementary school students in our state are currently back in the classroom where they can receive on-site instruction with their excellent educators and their staff. Yeah. I think this is great progress for two reasons. Number one, we all understand that in-person learning is the best environment for students. It is the best environment to have that magic relationship with their teachers that means so much to them.
Okay. And he said he was also asked about the state teachers union voting not to bring teachers back last night.
Is that this can be done safely for teachers. And I want to take just a moment to talk about this because this is central to this situation. It is entirely understandable that educators, bus drivers, cooks, nurses, counselors have legitimate concerns about this disease. It is a potentially fatal disease. That's really understandable. And when we made decisions early to close our schools and go remote, we were operating in a very much a vacuum of information. I believe we now need to make decisions based on what we know now, not what we know then. And what we know now is that we are fully capable of doing this in a safe basis.
So I had heard during the middle of this press conference, so he wants them to go back to school is what he said. He didn't say anything really inflammatory, just that we can do it safely, so do it. I will tell you, I was in on the Republicans media availability today, and Senator John Braun came right out and said, there's only one reason the kids aren't back in school, and that's the WEA, period. Mm-hmm. And they need to change that. So during this press conference, I heard from some people who they've been tweeting at me for a couple of days asking me to ask him about the fact if there's any flexibility to the 6-foot distance rule, which we heard at the Lake Washington School District was the reason why they weren't going to bring their kids back. And a lot of other large school districts are saying the same thing. So I asked Governor Inslee if there's any flexibility there.
If I had a nickel for every excuse I have heard from not giving our children on-site instruction, I would be a millionaire at this point. These excuses are getting just a little bit tiresome. Frankly, we know that we have 1,400 schools today in the state of Washington, urban and rural, east and west, rich and poor, bilingual, monolingual, and 32-lingual, that are doing this today with these existing rules. And yes, it is difficult. It is logistically challenging. It takes people to cooperate with one another. But we know all of that can be done effectively. And as a result of those efforts by educators, and superintendents and principals, this can be done. And this is the CDC guideline. It is a safe approach. Will we ever change it? There's a possibility. As we know more about science, as vaccines become more prevalent, as perhaps we start to knock down the infections. But today, we have two certainties. Our children are not getting the education they deserve, and we know we can provide it within the existing guidelines because we are doing it in so many places across the state of Washington.
So there you go. It's safe, and he's tired of the excuses.
Yes.
He sounded like you at the beginning there, John.
That's right. He's taking on the unions, John.
Well, I looked up to see which states have the strongest teachers union. We are 10th. We're not the strongest. And politically, we're 19th as far as donations are concerned to politicians. Other states are much stronger. California.
Okay.
Illinois have much stronger. And I thought, well, how strong is the teachers union? I mean, does it really have its foot on the throat of the governor? I know he's got the mask on. That jumbles his words. But I think just locally, they still have enough power. Obviously, they're in a great bargaining position. So if they want to try to get something, this is the time to get it. By the way, it was also the teachers union that was encouraging students and teachers and administrators to march in support of the systemic racism that was spreading across this country like a wildfire. And the peaceful protesters, I don't think they were 6 feet apart. You were out at a lot of them. I saw them marching for hours. I didn't see anybody. They had masks on. Some did when they were screaming and yelling lies. And outdoors, right. Or inside, but just 6 feet apart. Because you see the morons walking around Seattle with their dogs and their masks on. And they're 6 feet apart. But they were protesting and everybody's shoulder to shoulder. So when the WEA encourages people to go out and march around, and they're not 6 feet apart, but they somehow can't get into the classroom with their kids. How many hours a week? Here's the question to the teachers union. And Hannah, if you could get it. How many hours a week is a teacher instructing a child? Not this thing I saw in Ballard, which is 3 hours and then the kids do like free work on their own and they can contact the teacher if they want to contact the teacher.
3 hours is a lot.
Oh, is there 3 hours?
My kid gets like an hour and a half and then she's all on her own.
Well, and what's the teacher doing the rest of the time? Gardening?
Available if they need. By email.
Yeah, are they gardening? Students. Are they walking around? Are they shopping?
I don't know.
John, they have other students.
Your daughter is doing an hour of work?
An hour and a half of connecting with the teacher. where there's a Zoom.
But that's not all their students, John. I mean, they do a series of these things. It's not like university.
How many hours a day is the teacher working? Compared to in a classroom. So if you can get your full pay and work 60%, why would you want to come back?
Teachers are not working 60% from the teachers that I've heard of. We heard from a guy yesterday, by the way, a guy named Eric, who says that their concern is that if there's 30% of people that get COVID are long haulers, that could really be devastating to teachers when you got 40% of teachers that are over 50. If that's these are the kind of concerns that teachers are having.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right.
And
hey,
I think
Hannah,
there's still, because listen, I got to throw this out there. There's still the opportunity for parents, and there are parents who are not on board with sending their kids back to school in person. They have the option to keep them at remote learning, which means there will be teachers who continue to do only remote teaching, possibly the 50 and older crowd like you're talking about, Tom.
There you go. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like the compromise.
And again, parochial schools, private schools are open for the rich. And for everybody else that they seem to care so much about, screw those kids. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
All right, there she goes. Hannah would dance with you, Tom, if she walked across the... Were you able to do that? I could never get up enough courage to go... Because as I'm making my way towards the cute girl... I'm thinking I could see her like breaking eye contact with me, and I just couldn't take the rejection because then you got to turn around and walk all the way back across the gym again. Remember those days?
Absolutely, I remember those days. Indelible.
Oh my God, the worst. Jacob doesn't know about those days. I remember it. The worst of the worst. I went to Haverford School dance because I liked it because they kept the lights really dim. You couldn't see the pimple that was exactly right in the middle of my nose. I had crutches. I had broken my leg playing football, which I thought would give me some points. I hobble across the gym. I get to the other side, and I said, "You want to dance?" And the girl goes, "That's dumb. You're on crutches."
Whoops.
Then I had to turn around, you know,
and hobble back.
Coming back. All right, Tracy, I'm sorry. Kiel Mortgage 1-888-77-8. K-I-E-L. Nice, Sean. All right, that's Kiel Mortgage, the ones to call. By the way, front page Wall Street Journal today, mortgage rates going up, Tom. Yeah, just like I said, wasn't trying to scare anybody, but it's at 3% now. So the bottom was there. Hopefully you bought at the bottom. Hopefully you got in. You called Kiel Mortgage 1-888-778-KIEL. And you said, is it still too late for me to get in? Historically late, low mortgage rates. They'll let you know where they are with that. Okay, a couple of fun, interesting articles talking about the over CPAC happens over the weekend. It was the big conservative thing. It was in Florida because they couldn't do it in Virginia and New York, or Virginia and D.C. because of the whole everybody coming together, not wanting to wear masks. Go down to Florida where you're free, and you get Donald Trump has the big 90-minute stem winder, and he goes after Joe Biden and does his Trump thing. And then you had all the other guys that were sort of coming on there as well. And they were, you know, the young upstarts. So these are the guys that are going to be getting the nod for 2024. Does Trump hand off the torch to them? And how are they supposed to sort of fill the shoes of Donald Trump without being Donald Trump, but still being themselves? But has the party or has the ear of the Trump supporter become so attuned to the way the president, Donald Trump, or former president Donald Trump, expressed himself that they assume that's the way you have to sound?
And, yes.
And the weird thing is that each one of these speeches, I saw Ted Cruz. Did you see him? Boy, he's
yes.
put on a lot of weight. That's a lot of Mexican food. And he's jumping around, and he was like off the rails. Remember when Steve Ballmer used to go to those Microsoft things and jump up and down and do his monkey dance, they called it? Ted Cruz is just a crazy man, but yelling the same sort of stuff, higher tone than Donald Trump would. But they all sounded like Donald Trump's speeches just as far as the words were concerned.
Yes, and yet the audience responded differently. Now, the nice thing about this is it just isn't like Only Trump can do this. Trump has, I don't know, for want of a better word, I'll say charisma. Whatever he does, he has some kind of showbiz power that when he says a line and sells a line, people respond vociferously. What happened at the CPAC, they called it like an audition, run through for all these potential 2024 candidates in case Donald Trump doesn't run. And they say what's fascinating about this is to look to see what they're trying to do. For instance, you mentioned Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz looks at Donald Trump and says, what does Donald Trump have that I don't have? And it's energy. And so he is jumping up and down on the stage, reciting these rhetorical, overblown lines right and left. And he gets, as they said, kind of a tepid response. They're these big stem winders like Trump would deliver, but he doesn't have the knack for it. It doesn't come naturally. So it comes off as a fake imitation of Trump. And so you get the kind of polite applause. The same thing goes for a guy like Cotton. He's from Arkansas, senator from Arkansas, and he has a very kind of cerebral look to him and approach. Mm-hmm. And so what he does is he tries to make up for that approach by using the kind of clever rhetoric, or as they put it, wordplay that Trump might get a big chuckle out of. He delivers it. He pauses for effect, then delivers it, and gets like no response because they realize that's not authentic to Tom Cotton, that he isn't really a stem winder. And so they can see that distinction. Now, on the flip side,
I've got some Cotton.
They have halted deportations for all illegal aliens. Murderers, rapists, terrorists, MS-13 gang members are not being deported. They stopped building a wall on our border, and they put up a wall around your United States Capitol. And right now, as we speak, they are literally tracking down illegal aliens in Mexico who Donald Trump turned away to invite them to come back. That's not catch and release. That's recruit and release.
Woohoo!
And of course, you can't fly into them.
Okay. All right, Tom.
Yes.
For a minute there, I thought that was somebody in the room because I was like, well, one guy got it.
America without a negative coronavirus test, but you can cross our border without one.
Oh, boy.
Just flat. Now imagine Trump.
I like Tom Cotton. Listen, I like him.
Yeah.
But you're right. What has happened is the standard, it's like when somebody plays some role, everybody feels, well, that's the way you have to then play the role. I watched when Joe Kennedy gave the response, the Democratic response, and that's when young Joe Kennedy apparently had too much lip gloss on or something
right,
like that.
Yeah.
They said he began to pick up the pace and he was starting to deliver almost in the same cadence as Barack Obama.
Barack Obama, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and you've also heard other people try to deliver in the cadence and in the style of somebody like JFK.
Yes.
So you create a standard, an archetypal way of being the politician, of being the president, and then you sort of fill it in. And unfortunately, some people just can't play that role.
Yeah, and in that particular case, actually, I see what time it is. Let's go run. But this wasn't all just bashing. Like, in other words, no Republican is going to live up to the level of Trump's rhetoric and his showmanship. However, they did say that they were responses to some. And for instance, they said that people seem to like Ron DeSantis and Governor of Florida and Kristi Noem, Governor of South Dakota. And why is that? And they said the distinction is that they use the same kind of rhetoric, but it's those people, did things. They didn't just imitate Trump, like, say, Tom Cotton or Ted Cruz saying, hey, yeah, and we'll get the Mexican rapists and all that. They're not using just the rhetoric. Because they were governors of the state, they can say, see, I defied Anthony Fauci in South Dakota. I defied the CDC. I let the beaches run, free in Florida.
Yeah.
And people responded to that. So if you want to pick up the mantle of Trump, you can't just imitate Trump's rhetoric. You have to actually be a man or woman of action that that people can respond to, not just the rhetorical flair.
You have to have some blood on your sword, Tom, and you have to have see where the dings on the shield were too. You have to have come back from battle and have won, not just been in battle, because former president said, people that get captured are not heroes as far as he was concerned.
That,
I think it's great. Here we are. He's been out of office now for I don't know how many weeks. We'll continue to talk about him. CNN's ratings continue to slide, as do other media organizations, because they don't have anybody to beat up on. Joe Biden continues to do some hiding. And we don't talk about Joe Biden. Why aren't we talking about the president, Joe Biden? Why not? Yeah. I know that yesterday he gave a speech, and he was doing some sort of White House thing, and at one point he goes, now, am I supposed to take questions? No, I guess I'll do that if you need me to do that. That's what we're supposed to do. What am I supposed to do next? Nance? Speaking of Nancy Pelosi, and then they cut the feed. Will Joe Biden do a press conference? Both Trump and Obama at this point in their term had already done a press conference. Will Joe do one? Most likely not.
Oh, I don't know. He has been before the press, but I don't think there's any demand for it, actually, because
they yell questions.
It's so kind of flat.
He just walks away. He walks away. Yeah.
Oh, well, I look
forward to hearing from the president. Why didn't he do a State of the Union, by the way?
But you don't do the State of the Union until you've been in office for a year. Trump did the last State of the Union.
No. No, normally they do it. They'll do it February, like the middle of February. That they had it scheduled in the middle of February, like the 22nd, 23rd, and then they
canceled. I'll have to go back and check. Yeah. By the way, MSNBC numbers are up for some reason, which is weird.
Is it because they're doing Cuomo? They're doing Cuomo stories. Maybe that's it. All right, let's check to Tracy. I hear the music. Tracy, sorry. I stand corrected, Tom. You're right. So Trump did it February 5th, State of the Union. Biden was supposed to have a press conference, or was trying to schedule a press conference just an hour ago. The Washington Post says, when will he have one? That the press wants to get at him and fire a bunch of questions at President Joe Biden.
All right.
They said, get your platform, get it, then get in there. Don't lose this opportunity. Squealing children and noisy neighbors. There's now a map that allow you to be able to find out where the troublemakers are. I don't understand why people have problems. If you move into a neighborhood, one of the first questions you always ask, if you have kids, you say what, Tom? If you have kids,
the schools?
There's that.
Where's the nearest church?
Are the kids in the neighborhood? And they're like, yeah, there's a 5-year over here and there's 2-year. Mm-hmm. Because then what always happens is that kid, if the kid's the same age as you, miraculously, that kid becomes your best friend.
Right.
So everybody in the neighborhood all ride bike together and have lemonade stands together. That just comes with it. If the neighborhood begins to transition and there were no kids, but now there are kids, I guess some people have problems with the fact that the neighborhood gets too noisy.
Well, first off, this can apply, obviously, globally, but this is specifically an instance in Tokyo, in Japan, where a guy has decided to crowdsource noise complaints. So, you know, most cities have some kind of noise ordinance. You can't have it too loud after 10 o'clock at night or something and all this.
Yes.
And apparently in Japan, there are more and more concerns. Maybe because the population is getting older and older, and so they can't stomach the noise of children. But this guy's crowdsourced this website where you can find out where the complaints are. And he follows all the complaints and he just allows for anybody to report something. No one is ever outed by name. Like, it doesn't say, oh, at the Curly residence, he has two loudmouth toddlers or something. They don't do that, but they do put on a map the street where you live. And if there were a lot of toddlers or a lot of fifth graders or whomever that neighbors complain about, they show up on this map. And this is
what are you supposed to do then? Not move in there?
Well, first off, it's being used. There's a lot of social debate about whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. I suppose it's a good thing if you're an elderly couple who's looking to move into a very quiet neighborhood and you find out there's a school 2 blocks away and there are playgrounds and everything else, maybe that's something that would be handy to see and know about. Mm. Others, though, could find this as, oh, well, great, there are a lot of kids' noises there. I've got kids. This will be the perfect kind of neighborhood. But it's become a big debate in Japan now. Is this anti-kids? Is this noise intolerance a sign of problems in society between families and non-families and all of this? And it raises all sorts of societal issues. I personally, I live about maybe 5 or 6 blocks away from a school, and they're, you know, they're playground kids. If you live right across from a playground, you don't need a, interactive map to let you know it's going to be noisy at recess time. But in general, I just think it's an interesting habit. I wouldn't mind having one of these things out. I wouldn't want it to be used against people, you know, which I suppose
it could be. Where the noisy places are.
Neighborhood vigilantes.
Lace and I had a rule that if the kids were loud or noisy in church, restaurants, or any public places we go, we take them out. One of us grabs the kid and out the door. That whole, you know, don't mind the joyful noise, the pastor, you know. Right. And I was like, no, I do mind the joyful noise. I can't hear because this kid next to me is going, yeah, 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 yeah. That's not joyful noise. That's a kid who needs to get picked up by his parents and taken into the back. At St. Joe's in Issaquah, they got a whole room back there, Tom, separated by glass, and all the noisy, joyful noises.
Room.
Yeah, crying room. Yeah,
yeah,
but it's not even a crying room. It's basically the vestibule. You walk in to St. Joe's, there's all the seats for all the poor parents with all the toys and crayons on the ground, and then you go through that door into the church.
Yeah.
By the way, God doesn't pay attention to that back area. He's primarily focused on the front section. I always sat right down front. God's got old eyes. I needed to be able to clearly identify me. There's Curly, front row end, Tom.
Nobody first class.
That's Novitz baby in the corner.